Hello and welcome to episode number 11 of From the Internet. My name's Ryan John. I originally was just going to do 10 of these and then like call it the first season and then try something else maybe, but I'm really liking it. I'm liking the people I'm speaking to, people who are listening who are kind of thinking it's interesting, which is, you know, like a bit egocentric, but when people say they enjoy it, it makes you want to keep doing more. So I've got a whole bunch more lined up, so thanks for being a part of it. Today, I'm speaking to JB. JB is a lot of different things to a lot of different people. I met him in community radio, and he was a great, not only kind of media maker, but just like a leader of young people, I guess. When we were at Sin, he started as the EP of Brekkie when I first met him, of The Breakfast Shift, and then he went on to sort of more management roles, and he's probably shaped a lot of young media makers' minds and stuff, so he's great at that. And what I recalled during the conversation, I think I say it in this podcast, that JB actually gave me my first ever breakfast shift. And I loved it so much, I thought, I want to do this like forever. And now I do. Now it's my job. So I guess I love and owe him heaps for that. But one thing JB does great is he really stands up for people and society. And actually, his job now is a legal community officer. He makes media that stands up for us as consumers. So as well as being a talented media maker, he's actually making good stuff that does good things for society, juxtaposed to me that talks about shitty Kardashian stuff. It makes me feel guilty sometimes. And he's one of the better social media users, I reckon, from his personal accounts. Always has something to say, generates lots of debate, and it's good, healthy debate as well. I hope you enjoy this episode. JB's a cracking bloke, and I started by asking him why he got into media and communications in the first place, which for him started when I think he was 17 years old and he was at Radio Adelaide before he moved to Melbourne. But I asked JB, why media?
Yeah, so when I was in high school, I really, really, really wanted to be a journalist. That was what really called out to me. And I have to admit, when I was growing up and I was a little kid, it was because Tintin was a journalist.
Was he really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. What? Yeah.
Well, so he was a reporter. So that was the whole idea, was that he was traveling the world, solving crimes, but also as a reporter. So occasionally, he very rarely filed any stories. But
the ultimate dream, to be paid to be a reporter and not have to report on anything.
Yeah, no, it's great. So obviously, being a journalist or being a reporter was really exciting because I saw Tintin doing it. And so radio was kind of my way into that. Journalism was initially what I wanted to do. And so I started volunteering at Radio Adelaide in Adelaide because it just seemed like a good place to start. And actually kind of what happened when I started volunteering there was it really blossomed a creative side of me because it meant that, oh, radio, I can do a radio show about music, or I can do some journalism, but I can also talk about other topics. I can meet some comedians and chat to them, or chat to some artists as well, and do lots of different things. So in the end, getting involved at Radio Adelaide meant that I went, oh, journalism, that's nice and all, but there's a lot of other fun, different things and people in the community I can find out about and get involved in. So in the end, Radio Adelaide kind of killed my journalism dream a bit and broadened it.
Yeah, right. Well, do you consider, because a lot of your stuff that I see on the radio and online is kind of similar to your day job in a sense that is like, let's say like consumer activism, but maybe like citizen activism and that sort of stuff. Do you consider that like a type of journalism?
Yeah, I do. Like, I really like to challenge myself when it comes to social issues and social concepts and understand them as best as possible so that when I am on Twitter or if I am speaking about a social issue, I actually have some idea of what I'm talking about. So I really love in particular getting on Twitter and chatting with people about really complicated, complex things and trying to understand where they're coming from or learn a bit about where they're coming from. So I really think that something like Twitter in particular can actually be really powerful for social change. Because yeah. I know for me, hearing people say things on Twitter that I don't expect or that I don't understand has actually really changed my mind on a lot of issues.
And does it depend who that person is that changes your mind? Are you meaning like if it's someone who's in power or just someone who's an everyday folk just saying something you wouldn't expect?
Yeah, it's often everyday folk because that's the thing about Twitter is I've made a lot of friends on there who, you know, they're not famous people that don't particularly have public profiles, but they're really interesting people. They're really engaging people and have really interesting thoughts. And I love that idea of digital platforms in particular, where people you otherwise might not have met or heard of, you can get a conversation randomly started one day and then you go, whoa, like, I actually learn a lot from you. I'm really interested in who you are and what you do. And I find that really fascinating, that just everyday people can really challenge you and help you to learn new things. I love that.
How many of these people, like, I've got heaps of who I'd say like are Twitter friends, for instance, who we both go for Hawthorn. So when the Hawks win, we'll tweet each other. And I've never met them and stuff. And then on different topics, I always know there's a different bunch of people that will be talking about that topic. Have you ever met many of these people that you've like became, went from a Twitter friend to a genuine in real life friend?
Yeah, so actually my partner Kevin and I met on Twitter. So
is that right? Well, here we go. Here's the prime example.
Yeah, so basically I was sitting at home on Twitter most nights in a dingy little former drug dealer's flat in Melbourne, which was just awful. It was an awful place to live. The kind of place where basically if you walked around the street late at night, you just had to keep your head down and not pay attention to anyone and walk as fast as possible and not make eye contact with anyone. So yeah. I wasn't living in a nice suburb. I was living in a dingy little flat. And so what I would do is I would go home to my flat and chat to people on Twitter and sometimes have a whinge. And one of the things that sucked about living in a flat was I'd lived with dogs my whole life before I moved to Melbourne. So I would, you know, on a regular basis, probably every couple of days, have a whinge on Twitter about how much I missed playing with my dogs and seeing dogs. And so Kevin, my partner, is known as that dog dancing guy. And so he does dancing routines with his dog.
What a thing to be known for.
Yeah, I know. It's great. And so he really stood out to me and we started chatting about our love of dogs, and I just got really, really jealous because he would always be posting these great photos of his border collie, Cinder. And then one day he asked, hey, do you want to come for a walk with Cinder and I? And I then from that point found out that a border collie is a great pickup line.
Is that right? Yeah, well, that is the prime example of meeting people online in real person. Is he... like, can you remember back, because obviously this was a few years ago, I'm assuming?
Yeah, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, was he, like, the same in person as you would expect from meeting people online? Because I know I've met some, or come across people on Twitter that are hilarious, but then you might meet them and they're a bit dull, or vice versa, because sometimes it's hard to judge. What was the difference with him?
There really wasn't any difference. I think we'd spent quite a few months before we met chatting quite intensely on Twitter, both publicly and through the direct messages.
Yeah,
we were chatting a lot, and realistically, we were just flat out flirting with each other
in
over
the public
eye. Yeah, in the public eye, with other people jumping in and having a laugh at us because we were just such ridiculous flirts on Twitter. And so, for me, I find at least with the people I follow on Twitter, I don't follow them or really engage with them unless I have a sense that they really are an authentic version of themselves. I'll just flat out not follow someone if after a while they just don't seem to be themselves or they seem to be putting it on too much. And so when it came to meeting Kevin, we chatted so much and he was so authentic on Twitter that it really just felt like I was meeting this guy that I'd known for ages. So it really felt quite natural. It was, I thought, a much better way of meeting someone than, particularly for the gay community, something like Grindr or an app like that, you know, a dating site. Meeting Kevin through Twitter was actually so much more awesome because I felt I had so much more of a connection with him than anyone I'd ever met on a dating site or a dating app. It just, it was so much easier. It felt like we already had things to talk about and we already had a strong connection and there was no effort at all. It was great.
Yeah, right. Now, you've obviously mentioned Twitter multiple times already. Of all the things you use online, would that be your number one go-to platform? Is that the first thing you check in the morning or when you've got a thought, is that the first place you go to share it?
Yeah, absolutely Twitter, because I've just made lots of really great friends on Twitter. Like I said, I think I tend to follow people who I think are really authentic and really are themselves. And I find Twitter's really good for that. If you follow the right people, you can find people who are really funny and natural and engaging. And yeah, it might be people talking about what they've eaten for breakfast or the random thoughts that pop into their head at 2 a.m. in the morning. But often I find that stuff really funny and really insightful into people. So yeah, Twitter in particular is one that I love, and particularly that stuff of live tweeting events with people and you see their perspectives on it. So
yeah,
Q&A has been the big one for me with Twitter. Is I'm a little bit addicted. I pretty much am watching every single Monday night, and I probably have an unhealthy obsession with Tony Jones.
I think, well, you wouldn't be the only person to say that. I would have thought a lot of people, especially in the journalism world, like he's God.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's the silver fox of them all. There's no way about it.
Yeah, I think I missed Twitter for, like, since leaving Melbourne. It's not as big in regional areas at Twitter. So it's not as interesting for me. Like, because I remember being in Melbourne being like, oh, my God, I'm stuck on this train. Who else? And then, like, how things like that, you can find someone else in the same train or in the same building or at the same gig or whatever. And also being in a different time zone, like you just said with Q&A, it's useless. It's absolutely useless being 2 hours behind trying to tweet the TV because people are like, shut up, I watched it 2 hours ago. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, that was one of the weird things about moving from Adelaide to Melbourne was suddenly my Twitter stream was so much more fun because I could actually watch television shows at the same time as pretty much everyone else across the country, or at least the majority of the country.
And yeah,
now I've got all of my old friends in Adelaide who get really annoyed because I'm half an hour ahead of them on everything on TV. And so they hate it. It sucks.
Yeah, well, it does suck. I now live two hours behind the country, 3 hours in summer. And it almost makes Twitter useless except for sport, because sport is like the only thing that has to be live.
Yeah, good point.
It seems. Now, tell me a little bit about like the other stuff you use. You've got Facebook and Tumblr. I think I've stumbled across your Tumblr a few times, and you've written a blog or shared some things, and I kind of went, oh, this is great, and I had a look. And then I scrolled down the bottom, and it had been shared or noted or whatever Tumblr says like hundreds or thousands of times. Is that correct? And how? Because Tumblr doesn't get the recognition that a lot of other social networks do.
Yeah, Tumblr's really fun in the sense that it's much more visual. So you've got lots of people sharing funny GIFs or jokes, or sometimes it's just really beautiful artwork that people are sharing. Like, that's one of my favorite things for Tumblr, is I can just appreciate people who are just outstanding artists. And I love their work. It's the ultimate kind of, I just sit back and watch other people's amazing work. I don't find I contribute as much to Tumblr because I just get to enjoy the work of really, really talented people. So that's probably my favorite part of that, is the creative community around Tumblr. And by reblogging something on there, you can really help push someone else's talent just that little bit further. So I love Tumblr for that. I think it's great.
Yeah, great. Now, tell me a little bit more. I know you mentioned it earlier about your job during the day and how that can like assist or get you in the mindset to, when you're talking about social change, you know, on your blogs or on your radio and stuff like that, do they, the two kind of work together in sort of giving you the right mindset and information you need to tell a good story?
Yeah, so in my work at a community legal centre, basically what we do is, if people are in a really awful time of their lives and they're struggling with their finances, this is the kind of situation where people are really badly in debt and, you know, they've gone to a company to try and help them with their debt and then been absolutely abused. You know, there's all these services out there that pretend to help you when you're in trouble, and they just do the exact opposite. They take it as an opportunity to profiteer from you. And there's some pretty awful business models out there that really try to screw people over. And so in my job, I get to help out this really cool mix of people who we've got lawyers who will go in the courts and fight these companies tooth and nail to stop them from doing really nasty things to people in the community who are struggling. And if the lawyers can't fix it, then we've got policy people who go off to government, and they're the ones who'll have meetings with government ministers and try and convince them to change the law. And then we run a whole heap of campaigns where if the lawyers haven't been able to fix the problem, if the policy people haven't been able to fix the problem, then myself and the campaigns team at my work, we're the ones who get to basically stir a whole lot of shit and to mix things up and get a lot of public attention towards an issue. So often I'll be speaking to journalists at the major newspapers or at TV shows like A Current Affair or Today Tonight or The Project, and trying to get them really excited and engaged by an issue. And we'll run a big campaign to try and get, you know, the companies that are doing these really awful things to change how they work or get the government to change the laws. It's out of really awful situations. I find it really exciting and really challenging to come up to ways of communicating really complex consumer issues and make the public care about them. That's a really fun part of my job. And I'm fairly fresh into it, only a few months, but it's a really great challenge. I love taking ideas that I think otherwise often would be considered really boring. Often they're really technical, legal things or policy things that have a huge impact on people's lives. And it's my job to make them interesting, to make them exciting, to make the public really engaged as to why it's important we change a particular law, or why it's important that we know that this company sucks and their business model is screwing people over. It's my job to get that message out there. And yeah, it's really great. I'm loving it.
Yeah. Do you, like, you're one of the, I would say, the better Facebookers on my newsfeed. It's always something interesting to say, even if I like don't necessarily agree, it's interesting. Do you think, like, just your time on social media, just you being you, over the years and years has actually helped you be able to do a job that you have now? Because a lot of your just comments on life is about sort of social change and community education and stuff. Is it weird to think that someone who is just doing their thing on social media is now doing that as a job? Does that kind of wash over you, or that's the job you always wanted and were working towards? Like, how do you see that?
Yeah, I found it really weird how my social media following has built up, and I didn't really intend it to.
Yeah.
I seem to have accidentally built up a brand without knowing it. And then suddenly I had a bunch of friends and family say to me, hey, you actually have a fair amount of people who follow you on Twitter or read what you say on Facebook. Like, how did you do that? And I go, actually, I don't really know. It just kind of happened. And I think that's the thing that I learned out of that process is that I enjoy social media so much more because the people who follow me on Twitter or follow me on Tumblr or Facebook or whatever it is, they follow me because I'm me.
Yep.
I'm not trying to be anything else. I'm not trying to be anyone in particular. I really am just trying to be myself as much as possible.
Does that get weird sometimes when you post something, like a strong opinion on something, and then you're like, oh, and here's a picture of my dogs? And because I know I sometimes have strong opinions, and then people are like, what are you talking about? You're usually a dickhead who tells shitty jokes. Like, and it kind of gets a bit mixed and muddled sometimes.
Yeah, it can get a bit mixed up. But, I mean, what better place to test out the bigger, broader concepts of life and issues in the community than with your family and your friends and people who you actually respect? And that's the difference for me, is that I would prefer to put these things out to my family and my friends and people I have strong relationships with and actually have them challenge me. So I'd like it when they come back and tell me, nah, you're just totally speaking shit.
Yeah.
I actually like it when people come back and explain it to me and explain why. So that's why I like that mix of some of the fun, frivolous stuff, posting pictures of my dogs and then talking about more serious issues, because by having that mix, hopefully when I do talk about the more serious things, people are more willing to engage. But it's pretty hard to get that mix right, but I don't know. Like I said, I just try and be me as much as possible.
Yeah. Have you ever maybe not lost a friend, but, you know, put a friend offside or had a bit of a falling out because of an opinion or a thought on a certain topic?
Yeah, absolutely. It's sometimes the downside is that when you put out a strong opinion, some people just don't want to hear it, don't want to engage with it at all. And I figure it's sad, but if people don't even want to listen, don't even want to try, don't even want to engage in respectful conversation, then really it's not that much of a loss. I think it's really about the respectfulness of the conversation. I don't mind people disagreeing with me on things, and I'll often get into really robust discussions with people, but some of my favorite people are the people I've had absolute killer arguments with, but at the end of the argument we go, oh well, that was fun, we'll agree to disagree.
Agree to disagree.
Yeah, you know, but we got something out of it. We learned a little bit about each other's perspectives and why we think the way we do, and then maintained being friends from there. I think those friendships are so much stronger than the ones where you just totally blow smoke up each other's asses. I just,
yeah,
those friendships, to be honest, just bore me. I don't like the idea of everyone around me just blowing smoke up my ass. So I really respect those people who do come and speak to me and give me their honest opinion. But yeah, sadly, sometimes it does lead to people no longer wanting to connect with you or be friends with you. But thankfully, that's rare in most cases.
Yeah, I think actually just hearing you say that just makes me think about my radio show, and that when people call in, sometimes I'll have an opinion and people will call in and really disagree and just get really, really angry about it. And for me, that it's not just like, well, that's what makes great radio, but I find it fascinating and I'm always open to being convinced the other way. And I think that's kind of important to have like a flowing conversation. And I've had people call in and get really, really angry about the topic, but I would never just be like, well, never call this show again. Because you want to hear that. I think we are similar in the sense that I like being challenged, and you say that as well. A lot of people being challenged is terrifying, and that will actually stop them saying what they think in the first place for fear of someone going, well, hang on a sec, they're JB, I don't think that's quite right. Would it be weird in our jobs to not want that challenge coming back?
Yeah, I think it would be weird, because particularly now that I'm in a job where I have to sway public opinion and I have to get people behind a campaign or behind political or social change, I have to understand how the other side are thinking. Otherwise, I'm just totally wasting my time. And so I have to engage in those conversations. Unless I figure out how the people whose minds I want to change, how those minds work, then I'm just going to fail miserably. There's no point in even trying unless I somewhat understand what's going on in their heads. And the best way to do that is to engage in conversation with them. It isn't always fun, it isn't always pleasant, but provided you actually learn something about how they think, well, then you're getting somewhere and then you actually have a chance of turning them around. But if you just don't engage, then you're going to get nowhere in changing anything.
Yeah. Now, you've said that you're enjoying the current job and I'm sure you're doing a great job, and I see a lot of stuff pop up. What would be the dream job for you, JB? Because you've got a lot of skills. You're obviously very smart. Is there a way where this can all come together? Is there like an end goal, or are you just trying to do stuff that keeps you interested at the time and you'll see where it goes? Or how do you think about work and life like that?
I find I have a bit of an issue with the idea of a dream job. And part of this comes from my time working in community media, and particularly helping lots of young people with their career paths and helping them learn about what they want to do with their futures. Because it seems that this idea of having a dream job in your mind has made so many people in their early careers completely one-eyed about what they want, that often they completely miss another job or another opportunity that could actually make them a hell of a lot happier.
Yeah, right.
And I just find it so depressing and so sad when that happens.
Me an example of that? It doesn't have to be names or companies or anything, but just to...
Yeah, so often...
Because for me, because you and I both worked in community radio at the same time, and I just wanted radio to be my job. It didn't have to be commercial radio, but, like, you know, I have rent to pay. So I just wanted to do radio and to be able to live off it. And so essentially I have my dream job right now. So yeah, give me an example of maybe what I could have missed in trying to get to where I am.
Yeah, so a strong example I've seen a lot of is, say, young people who want to be a sports journalist, just as a fairly generic example. And all they want to do is sports journalism, and they absolutely chase that as their number one priority in their lives. But often that means that that is all they produce, all that they do, all that they focus on. So they might volunteer for a community radio station and only make sports programs, only talk about sport 100% of the time.
Yeah.
And so often in those cases, I've then seen young people then get a job as a sports journalist and realize, oh, I actually hate this job.
Yeah.
I really hate this job. And I've found often that focus on just the one job or the one position or the one title has led so many people to that particular path that they actually get the job and they go, nah, I really hate this. And the reality is that what it's actually like working in the job when they get it is awful and doesn't make them happy. So,
and they sort of stuck there because that's they have all their portfolio and body of work is all on this one thing, and suddenly that's all they've got.
Yeah, I find it really sad because often they are actually really talented, really amazing people who could do really outstanding things, but because they've had that singular focus, then their worlds fall apart because they have nothing else to land back on, nothing else to look towards. And so my personal approach has tended to be, well, in my career and in the jobs I do in future, I just want to be happy.
Yep.
Happiness is actually my number one thing that I want to chase in my career and in my life and what I want to do. And I don't care so much about the path there or the title that I have. But if I'm happy in what I'm doing, then that's what matters to me. And so in my current job, I didn't picture myself working in consumer law. And probably if you asked me 5 or 10 years ago whether consumer law was something I was interested in or cared about, I would have told you to get stuffed. Like, it just sounded like the most boring thing ever.
Yeah, right.
But before I got this current job, I told myself and realized within myself that I really wanted to be challenged and to learn new things. And having worked in community radio and a few other types of media, now that I am working in consumer law in that area, I'm able to bring a really unique and different skill set to a place that really needs a different perspective and needs a different way of thinking about things. And I bring much more value by shifting myself out of what was my initial dream and shifting into a different area. I bring so much more value and I learn so much more myself and I feel so much more challenged and fulfilled by, yeah, doing something different. So for me personally, I think I wouldn't be as happy if I'd stuck to that one goal of just being a journalist.
Yeah.
If I'd stuck with that, I don't think I'd be as happy as I am now.
Yeah, and so this is like maybe an impossible question to answer and quite deep, but when you say the main goal is to be happy, so what does that look like for you? And then I guess you may have already answered some of it in that you used the word challenge many times. Is that something that makes you happy to kind of take on a challenge and something to get excited by and have a crack at?
Yeah, I think I really need something new. I need to be learning something new in whatever I'm doing, or I get really frustrated very quickly. So unless I feel there's something new to reach for or something new to implement or something to change, I get really fidgety and I want to start doing things in new ways. So,
is that a Gen Y thing that we might get too bored too easily?
Yeah, it probably is, but I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. I think it's just a new way of working. And
yeah.
So that's how jobs work now. That's how life works now. I don't necessarily think it's a good or a bad thing, but part of it as well is keeping yourself in check and making sure that you're not overdoing it. is probably the hardest part to figure out is, yeah, and I'm doing all these different things, maybe jumping from job to job to job as often we do in our generation, is figuring out at what point that's not sustainable anymore. That's probably the hardest question. But yeah, I know for me, feeling as though I'm actually learning something is probably the most important part in my career and in jobs, is I want to feel like I'm actually learning something and growing as a person in some way. That's what I really want out of a career.
Yeah. Now, obviously, we're talking about the dream job. Would there be, not the dream, but like, if there were one project or one sort of social topic or one thing that you would love to have a say in the change of, and I know it's hard because there's many things in this world that need changing, and but is there one thing in particular that you'd really like to like tick off and be like, I was so happy I was part of that, and something that you could, you know, really hang your hat on for the rest of your life, I guess?
At the moment, marriage equality is pretty important to me and to my partner, Kevin, because yep. It's just something that I think is really important for LGBTI Australians. And there's differing opinions all across the community and even within the LGBTI community. But I really want to be a part of that discussion and help push to make it happen as much as possible, because I really don't want to see gay kids grow up and feel that they're lesser in the Australian community. That yep. is just something that makes me so deeply sad, is that idea that there are gay kids all across Australia who don't feel comfortable with their sexuality, don't feel comfortable with who they are. And we have something written in our law which specifically excludes them and specifically tells them they're a lesser person. That's something that I really want to be a part of changing, and making sure that kids in the community, regardless of their sexual or gender identity, can grow up and just be themselves and not have to hide who they are, hide who they want to be. That's something I'm really passionate about.
Do you think obviously we haven't got there yet, but just the overriding support for marriage equality is in itself helping those kids feel better about themselves? Because yeah, I don't know, absolutely. Maybe I'm biased and maybe the internet's got it wrong, but I feel like every single person online is ready and wants this real bad. And I don't know why that doesn't reflect on the lawmakers.
The community is absolutely behind it, I think. I think it's a very small minority of extremist people who are fighting really hard against it. And so we're so close. And marriage equality certainly isn't the be-all and end-all, because you look at the fight for women and equality for women, is we can say we've made so many gains along the way, but it all intersects and interrelates. The treatment of women in our society and them reaching equality intersects with a lot of stuff in the LGBTI community, and trying to deal with the absolute base structural stuff in our community about how we think about women, about how we think about gender and sexuality. There's a lot of stuff we really have to go a lot deeper into challenging. And so one of my personal missions is to try and challenge that really deep cultural and structural stuff as much as possible. So a really good example is how we actually think about living as men and living as women. I think there's a lot we really need to change about being men in Australia, particularly when you look at the mental health, not just of gay men, but men generally in the community. We have such horrifying rates of suicide and mental health problems that I think we need to change what being a man is and what being a woman is, and stop expecting ourselves to live in such rigid gender roles and expecting us to be so limited in who we are and what we are. That's what I really want to see change, is go, hey, everyone in the community is really different. Let's accept that. Let's embrace that and celebrate that, instead of expecting men to be these emotionless, really rigid, creatures. I want to see Australia get past that. And I think once we get past those really basic structural and cultural issues, that's when we're really going to start seeing change. So something like marriage equality, it's just a symptom of really bigger, broader issues underlying it. And, and that's what I really want to play a role in changing.
Do you think we've come a lot? Like, it's obviously the marriage equality one is, like, it's going to be a big moment because it's such a drastic, like, it's allowed or it's not. Which makes it a clear to see, like, a gain. But do you think, in general, over the last 5 or 10 years, there has been a big shift to what you're pushing towards now?
I think we're slowly getting there. But one of the issues is that when it comes to changing how we view gender and sexuality in particular, is that there are people in the community who benefit from how things used to be. So there are particularly some older, I'll be direct, some older white men in the community who still quite benefit from having a lot of privileges in their lives. And it's really scary for them to have that challenged and to have that change in front of their eyes. And so I'm not surprised that often they fight really hard against things like marriage equality or equality for women, because it actually does mean giving up a little bit of their privilege. It means giving up a little bit of that extra edge that they've had over those other groups in the community across their lives. And so I kind of get why it's scary for them, but we have to get to a place where we explain that there's benefits for everyone in having a more equal society and accepting diversity across society. So I think we're getting there, but there's no wonder why those who've benefited from those unequal structures are fighting so hard against it, because that's all they've known.
Yeah, and will they ever change, or it's just a matter of as time goes by, they get older and move on, and the younger generation who are more accepting move through, and it's just one of those generational things? Or do you think that those people are genuinely open to change?
So what you're saying is they'll die out.
I didn't want to use that word, but I think everyone listening knew exactly what I was saying.
Look, I think that's probably the sad reality of it, is that, yeah, as generations start to move on, the next generation takes over. And so a lot of it just does take time. It's over the decades. We see these changes happen really incrementally. But it doesn't actually happen unless there are particularly younger people standing up and saying, no, this actually needs to change. This part of our community needs to change. This part of our culture needs to change. If we don't have those people constantly pushing, then it really can never happen unless you have that. So I think it's really important to keep up that push as much as possible.
What would you tell 18-year-old JB if you could just a couple of points on life or career or moving to Melbourne from Adelaide? Or is there a couple of... Because I always think all the time, I'd love to interview my future self, and I would also love to tell my former self many things. Is there anything in particular that you would like to share with your younger self?
Well, firstly, to 18-year-old JB, just admit that you're gay and go and have sex. Have as much sex as you like. It's great. Just go ahead and enjoy it.
So how old were you when you like really accepted yourself like that and were cool? Because was that still at 18, you were still unsure or not confident to share that? Or
so I played around with my sexuality, and I wasn't really sure of where I landed until I hit my early 20s. And then it was kind of an open secret amongst my close friends until I moved to Melbourne. So I moved from Adelaide to Melbourne when I was 22, and it was kind of an open secret at that stage, but one of the reasons I moved to Melbourne was because I wanted to explore that fully and really come to terms with that. And so, yeah, it took me quite a few years to come to terms with my sexuality, really.
And do you think now that, oh man, knowing what you know now, it wasn't as bad as you thought it would be, or it was, people were cooler with it, or you, like you said, you wish you just could have been having a whole bunch more sex earlier on?
I think, I'm not ashamed at myself of having waited, because that was my circumstances. I was living in a city that isn't quite as open, isn't quite as comfortable with the gay community as Melbourne is. And it just, it took me time to figure it out. And so it's not really a regret that I didn't figure that stuff out earlier, but I wish I'd learned that thing in my mind where I go, ah, challenging myself and just taking a risk and dealing with the consequences of that risk and growing and learning from that is so important to my life. I'd wish I'd gotten that philosophy earlier. And so it's even less related to my sexuality and figuring all that out. I just wish I'd had more guts to challenge myself in lots of different ways in my life earlier. But yeah, it would have been nice in terms of relationship-wise and being able to go out and meet people. Yeah, I would have liked to have had a lot more sex a lot earlier.
I feel like after all the interesting things we've said, finishing on that line almost doesn't do this chat justice. But for me, who likes silly things, I think I will just leave it there. JV, thanks so much for chatting. Where can we find you on the different social media outlets to see all the different things you're talking about?
So you can search for me at JB_AU on Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. And you can also find me at jbau.com.au.
Oh, actually, do you want to know a fun fact as well?
Yeah.
You gave me my first ever breakfast radio shift.
Ah, oh, score. So does that mean I kind of created you?
Well, I don't know.
Did I create the monster?
I was about to say, is that something you'd want to lay claim to?
I'll proudly lay claim to that.
All right. Well, thank you again for that. That was great. And also, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks, man.